This podcast is sponsored by ebookit.com, self-publishing solutions for the independent author and small press. Visit us today at ebookit.com.
Welcome to the Toastmasters podcast, the official podcast of Toastmasters International.
Hello, everybody. This is Greg Gazin.
And I'm Ryan Levesque.
Ryan, who is that? What was that voice?
The voice that introduced the podcast today is an imposter. That mysterious voice is our guest for today, Lily Wexu. And Lily is a Canadian actor, director, and, wait for it, voiceover talent. Living in Los Angeles, Lily has an impressive resume of television and film appearances, including appearing as Dr. Hunley on Grey's Anatomy. Ms. Wexu's voice was heard by billions of people worldwide as she was an announcer during the opening ceremonies of the 2010 Winter Olympics in Vancouver. Ms. Wexu was featured in the March 2017 issue of the Toastmaster magazine in an article entitled Toastmasters Act Out. Ms. Lily Wexu, welcome to the Toastmasters podcast.
Welcome.
Thank you so much. Nice to hang out with you guys on this podcast.
I feel a little intimidated, Ryan.
Yeah, Lily, why don't you give me, this is Toastmasters, we like feedback and evaluation. Why don't you give me a quick little evaluation of my reading of your introduction?
It's stellar. You rocked it.
All right, you can give me the real feedback once we're done recording, but thank
exactly.
you. So we're excited to chat with you today. You've got a wide variety of activities that you do professionally, an interesting background. I didn't mention this, but of course, you're also a Toastmaster. But why don't you share with us, how did you get involved in voiceover work?
Getting involved in voiceover work was sort of an accident. I wanted to be an actress and I wanted to study communications and theater. And I worked in this bar, to pay rent. There was a local radio station they were airing their show on the lunch hour live from the bar I was working at. And that year, for some reason, everybody would compliment my voice. It's never really happened since, ironically, but that year, people would just take notice and say, oh my God, you have a great voice. People said, you should do radio. And I was like, yeah, great. How do I start? And it so happened that these DJs would hang out at the bar. They also would say the same thing. And then one day they needed some liners. And what happened was that Howard Stern had his show syndicated and it was airing in Montreal, Quebec, Canada. And for anybody who knows about Quebec, it's French Canadian. They speak French. And he went and did this press conference and insulted French Canadians. And it was this big brouhaha. And anyway, the station, which was an Anglophone station, wanted to tell their audience, look, we know that you're not necessarily English speakers, but we know you listen to the station and we appreciate you as listeners. So the DJs got me to come in and read liners that said something like, you're listening to Mix 96, in French. And that sort of started my career because those guys kept hiring me over and over. And one of them became my mentor. He took me under his wing and taught me everything I know today. So it was sort of an accident, and it's because of Howard Stern.
Wow, Howard Stern.
Yeah.
Voiceover talent, that could mean different things. What does that really encompass?
Yeah, voiceover talent is sort of a wide description. In my case, it means recording commercials for radio and television. I do a lot of corporate narration. Nowadays, there's video on every business website. And so a lot of corporate narration will entail narrating videos like that, like how-tos and promotional videos about certain companies and their products or training for staff. Also, I do a lot of live events where I'm the MC, sort of. Like they call it the voice of God because you don't really see the person. You just hear the voice, kind of like in the Olympics. That's a live event kind of scenario for voiceovers. But there's also people who do animation, documentary narration. It is a wide sort of field.
I've got a question about that. This is something I've always wondered about when it comes to animation. How does it work in terms of syncing the narration with the character's moving mouth? What comes first?
Yeah, well, there are two ways to do it, actually. One way is, I think they call it prelay, and the other one is more like dubbing. So prelay means the actors get together and they just literally go at it. They act it out. They'll get together in a room with four or five actors and they'll just act out the entire dialogue. And then the animators will animate around what the actors did. The other way is the dubbing, in which you get an animation and you literally have to sit there and they give you three beeps before it's your turn to go. And you have to watch the animation. You have to watch the mouth of the character start to move. And then you have to fit in your dialogue with that movement. So it's very technical. So those are two ways to do animation. Now in video games, where there's also voiceover work, a lot of the times it's the first way that I described. It's prelay. So you just go in and you say your lines and then they'll animate around what you did.
Cool. Which do you prefer?
Well, it's much easier to just go in and be free and to just say your lines, and then you can do them multiple different ways. It can be a little bit quicker as well, whereas a dubbing is very technical. You know, you have to get it right all the time, and it's much more technical. I mean, they're both interesting in their own right, but I think as an actor, the freedom is nice to not have to follow anything, to have people follow your lead. They're both fun.
Lily, you do the voiceovers, and you're portraying characters, for example. How do you perfect the voice? How do you get to know what that voice looks like? Do you visualize it in your head? Do you study that character? How do you do that?
Well, a lot of times, like for video games or animation, luckily, you'll get a drawing, usually, of what the character will look like and a description. They'll say very specific things about the character. So let's say it's a video game and she's a super villain. You know, they'll say she's vengeful, and they'll really give you a long list of descriptions. And then what I do is I read the dialogue sort of very flatly first, just to get the words out correctly in my mouth. And then once I'm comfortable with what I'm saying, I play with the lines. I play with each line and just have fun with it. A really good question I ask myself is, what does this character want? And what is this character afraid of? With those questions in mind, then I go, okay, it's clear. This character wants to undermine this other character. So then I keep that sort of in the back of my mind without thinking about it too much when I'm acting, but it's very clear to me what the character wants, you know, from other people. And also I ask myself what the character fears, because that way that's a pretty good trigger into what will make the character mad or where the sensitive spot of that character will be. That sort of helps. But what happens when you do a lot of these, you don't have a lot of time. So you kind of have to work that out before you go in. And then kind of when you go into the session, you have to kind of forget about all that and just trust that you have it inside of you. It's a bit of homework, sort of asking yourself, like, you know, what would I want if I was in this situation? And what would I be afraid of if I was in this situation? So, because we're all the same, you know, essentially we all have fears and we all have desires. They're just informed by where we're from. So, yeah, but for video games and animations, it's not as deep as, you know, when you're playing a character for television or film, where it's very dramatic, or in animation and video games, it's rather light. So it's not like you have to really rack your brains, you know. When you're playing a character for film or television, you do want to rack your brain out, and you want to really work hard on that. Not that you don't work as hard, it's just lighter work in animation and video games.
You mentioned film and television. Now, the characters, obviously, it's more than just a couple of lines. I mean, I'm a master of bad karaoke. I'll start off with really mimicking that voice, and then halfway in, I lose it. How do you maintain that? Like, how do you maintain the consistency and maintaining the strength over long periods of time?
You know, that is difficult. Like, one of the things that you learn if you take classes in acting, especially with on-camera stuff, is that you have to be at the same level for every take. And sometimes for one scene, you're going to shoot it in multiple different angles. They might cut it halfway through and then pick it up later that afternoon. And you have to emotionally be in the same, have the same intensity that you had earlier. So that is difficult. You know, that is the work of an actor, to have very strong, like, emotional marks, so that when you tune into them, you're in the same vicinity. It's all about the homework when you're doing film and TV work, and making sure that you've created a backstory for your character that is very, very clear, so that when emotions happen to you in the scene, you know why they're happening to you, so that you can tap into that later the afternoon or the next day. So it's all about being very, very clear about the homework that you did. If your story is solid, it should hit you in similar areas, maybe in different parts of the scene, but it should hit you in a relatively same way.
Lily, as a voiceover artist, obviously, but also as an actor, your voice is one of your most important assets. What do you need to do to keep your voice in top shape?
They say that the best thing to do is you should, when you wake up in the morning, you shouldn't speak for the first hour and a half because your larynx, incidentally, I'm having trouble with my voice right now because I had to speak very early this morning. The first thing you do when you wake up is you're not supposed to speak because your larynx positions itself in your throat after about an hour and a half. That can be hard to do when you have a family. I try not to speak in the morning. And then the first thing I do is I breathe in some steam. So I'll boil some water and I do the old, you know, you put a towel over your head and over a bowl and I just breathe some steam for about 5 minutes. And then I do warm-ups, sounds, and then with different vowels. Then I don't sing, but I'll sing those exercises out, not properly sung. I'm not a singer, but you know, just to elongate those sounds and some ga, ga, ga's. I do a little bit of what a singer might do, but speaking is different than singing. And so after that, I might do some tongue twisters and I'll just read out loud and see how it sounds. And usually I have to read out loud for a little bit before it kind of settles down. Like right now, I still have sort of a very deep morning voice because I've spoke very early, but I didn't speak enough to kind of get it oiled. That's a sort of a typical 20-minute warm-up that I will do every minute after not speaking, if possible, for the first hour and a half. And then it's also noticing, you know, when the voice is tired. For example, if I speak a lot in one day because I've had long narrations to record, it's just knowing when to stop, because I've learned the hard way that voice is actually a finite resource. You can overspeak. You have to speak a lot, but you can overspeak. And once you lose your voice from overspeaking, the only remedy is actually not speaking. And that could mean not speaking for an entire week. And if you're a voiceover talent, that's pretty deadly. So it is something that with experience, I've noticed the weaknesses in my voice and I stop now when it's tired.
Not to make it sound like the wrong thing. It sounds like you do talk a lot.
Right. Yeah.
Looking at all the things that you've done also in English, French, and Spanish, all the accomplishments that you have recently on Grey's Anatomy. Congratulations for that.
Thanks.
You're welcome. Why Toastmasters?
Actually, Toastmasters came to me at a time where I had this thing happen to me where it was not very sexy or appealing, but I will disclose it on this show. I had acne, sort of adult acne just came over me like overnight. It's a skin condition called rosacea. And I could no longer do any film or TV work. I couldn't go on camera. It was so bad that no makeup could cover it. And also my self-confidence was shot. I had to do something to keep performing. My mother had wanted to do Toastmasters and she's never done it, but it kind of stayed with me. I thought, oh, that Toastmaster thing, it's about speaking in public. So I went to a meeting, and even though it's terrifying to go when I had this skin condition, it wasn't as bad as going on camera for some reason. I just put a lot of makeup and kept a distance from people. And I thought all the way from the lectern, you know, they won't be able to see. I went to Toastmaster meetings and I loved it. I found this group. Obviously, it's all about finding your own group that works for you. But I found this amazing group. It did way more for me than I even expected. I mean, I thought it was going to just be something to keep me on stage a little bit and keep me from rusting, you know. Turned out to be this amazing journey that really changed my life, gave me my confidence back. Luckily, my skin condition is under control and do camera work again. But in the meantime, it's just been this mainstay, and I've made amazing friends and learned some amazing skills, found out more about myself and what matters to me. And I can't imagine my life without it.
What are some of the specific skills? What were some of the takeaways that you got from Toastmasters?
You know, it's so funny because people go there to learn how to speak, and they're deathly afraid of speaking, which I wasn't deathly afraid of speaking. I was deathly afraid of revealing my true self, because when you're acting, it's other people's words. But actually, and it's still the thing I'm working on, is listening. It was a big experience in listening, because, you know, you have to do those evaluations and you have to be a really good listener to give a good evaluations. And in all the roles, like, you know, when you're being the awe counter, and you really have to listen. So that's been a big revelation. Another skill, I think, is the structure of speaking. It's amazing. it taught me so much about the message. You know, you can talk all day and all night about something, but if you don't have a good structure, people won't be able to take anything away. And keeping it simple, which I struggle with all the time. Have a structure, keep it simple, less is more. And the biggest challenge I find is really that less is more. Somebody said a quote the other day, and I thought it was really good. They said, if I had more time, this letter I'm writing to you would be shorter, because it is harder to be concise. It is much harder to be concise. But when people are concise, we take away so much from their speeches. In order to have an impact, you really have to master that. That's what I'm learning there. And it's invaluable in any setting, really.
Because that makes sense, because it sounds like, obviously, a lot of the scripts are pretty much handed to you. So you're really taking other people's words. And with Toastmasters, it's allowing you to perfect your own words as well.
It's so interesting how the two, they kind of relate in a very kind of deep way that I won't get into here because it goes too deep. But yes, you know, they're other people's words. You don't have to think about the quality of them. So when you're an actress and you're given a less than stellar script where you're not too impressed with the words, it's very easy to criticize. Whereas, you know, when it's your own speech, you have to be responsible for those words. And it's an amazing opportunity to see the work that goes into writing. It's very easy to criticize writing when you've never done any writing. So once you finally have to write your own things and take responsibility for them, it's very different. And it's humbling. It's really an amazing skill to write, I have to say. Like, I love writing. It's one of the reasons why Toastmasters also appealed to me, is that in acting, I was never in charge of the writing, whereas now I get to be in charge. I get to say what I want to say. But then you're like, oh, well, what am I saying?
Lily, I'm curious to know, as you're exploring your own words and finding your own voice metaphorically as a speaker, what types of speaking styles do you tend to be drawn to? In other words, are you enjoying giving humorous speeches, informative speeches, inspirational? What's kind of your niche?
Yeah, that's a good question. What's interesting is I consider myself a very serious person, in the sense that I like to delve deep into whatever I'm doing. If I'm searching a subject, I like to go very deep. But what's funny is that when I speak, I've been finding that sometimes it's quite humorous. Not the whole speech, but I've been finding a lot of humor in my speaking without really noticing. That's been interesting, and we respond really well to humor, obviously. So I like humor speeches, I will say that. I don't want to try and do them, because I feel like if I try to do a humorous speech, it might not be humorous. But for some reason, I'm able to be humorous through them. So that's been a sort of a blessing, I feel. I love inspirational speeches, but what I love even more is giving people, like, formative speeches where you actually give people practical tools about things. I'm not the best at doing that. I think I'm much more on the inspirational side naturally, but I want to move towards giving people actual instructional tidbits that they can take away, because that's what works for me.
I'd also like to ask you, I visited another Toastmasters club recently. The evaluator who was evaluating an icebreaker made a comment that the speaker's speech was more of a speech than a performance. And this evaluator pointed out that oftentimes he'll see speeches that are highly theatrical that to him seem more like performances than mm-hmm. speeches. So someone mm-hmm. who is a professional actor, how do you draw that line?
You know, that's really interesting. This morning, I was just at a contest at my club, and one of the speakers did a speech that was very much like a performance. Something I heard recently was that a speech has to be about the audience. So what happens in performance sometimes is that, especially if you don't have a lot of experience, it sort of becomes about you. Only masters of performance can really make it about other people. So I think that's kind of where the line is. As long as it's for people and people can take something away, then I think it's fine. It's the moment where it's all about you and all about the performer and their performance and what they're doing. Then we're watching there and we're not affected by it. It's like you watch a beautiful movie, but it doesn't do anything for you. And I think a speech, to me, in my mind, when a speech is a speech, it's because it affected you. You know, you felt like a person was talking to you and you could relate to it. So as long as your performance has those relatable moments, then I think it's okay. Does that make sense?
It does. It does. And what about having the words, again, scripted for your speech and perhaps memorized or portions of it memorized, maybe even having certain gestures or facial expressions pre-planned? In your mind, is that okay, or does that reduce the authenticity?
You know, that's a good question, because in acting, they would say that does reduce, like if you're acting, especially in an audition scenario, or if you're on set, you know, you don't want to pre-plan things like that, you know, because it doesn't make it seem like real life. However, for a speech, those things can be very key. You know, there's something about owning the speech where those things can be very valuable. There's something about authenticity, you know, you've got to sort of really build it in. If you're just doing it because someone told you to do it and you don't own it, then don't do it. It has to really come from you. I think it's totally fine to have pre-planned gestures. I'm not a huge fan of speeches where the language is all preset and the person has learned the words exactly. It's not my favorite kind of speech, but sometimes the lyrical aspect is really beautiful and it works. It just depends on the speech. You might want to have a few sentences that are programmed, key expressions or quotes or a beautiful turn of a phrase that sums up what you're trying to say. But other than that, I'm a fan of rewording it and letting it come out as it will in the moment. I'm not against, you know, pre-programmed gestures, because sometimes they draw attention to a very specific thing that is key in the speech. What doesn't work is when the person doesn't stand behind it. They're not convinced. They've been told, you know, do this or do that, or they're not sold on it. You know, that's when it doesn't work. When it's authentic, you know, you can be as hammy as you want. If you love it and you stand behind it, you'd be surprised with how much a person can get away with. We don't get away with it when we don't stand behind it, because then it feels fake. And then as an audience, we're just kind of grossed out by it.
When we listen to our evaluations, I think the idea is that the individual who's giving you that evaluation is giving it from your perspective. I think that when you hear something, if somebody says, well, you know, you might have this gesture here, or you might say this here, my thought would be is to internalize it and make it your own. If you can make it your own and you feel comfortable with it, then that's fine.
Exactly.
There might be an individual who prefers to keep the gestures to themselves, and that's sort of their thought. And someone says, well, no, you got to make the gestures big. But if that person's, their nature is not that, if they make a big gesture, it'll just not seem natural.
Absolutely. And that's a big thing that sometimes we don't take into account, because, you know, we have the manuals and we have, which are great. I think everybody should get out of their comfort zone all the time. I'm all for it. Try things that you would never try. And if it fails and it feels bad, remember that you are who you are, and what works for you may not work for the next person. And I think you're absolutely right in saying that you have to internalize it and make it your own. And so what may be a grand gesture for someone else might be very minute for you. And as long as it's authentic, people will be into it. They won't be disturbed by it. You know, Toastmasters is just, it's just an amazing, it's really revolutionized my life because of everything that we've been talking about. You know, they seem like these little details, but it's so huge. Like, to own your gestures, like, that's a big deal. You know, like, who are you up there? Who are you up there? What kind of a speaker are you? Are you more the performance type? Or are you the speaker type? Like, we don't know these things when we start, right? We discover them as we go along, and they may change over time as well. Like, if you're a Toastmaster for 20 years, like, maybe that changes, you know?
Lily, we've been talking about voiceovers. We've been talking about speeches. And what I was wondering is, quite often people have a script they're reading from, or when they're doing a speech, maybe they're given a script. Any suggestions on how to make things more conversational when you actually do have a script, or you need to read from a script or a teleprompter?
A tip to make it more conversational for myself: what I do, if I have time, I will record it as is, and I will put no intention in what I'm saying. Like, literally read it like the most boring, just you're reading an ingredient list, right? Read it, blah, 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 blah. No intention whatsoever. I'll record it, and then I'll go for a walk. And I'll listen to that, and then I'll repeat it. And I'll listen to that, and I'll repeat it. And I'll listen to it and repeat it. And then after about 3-4 times, the words just become your own, because you've not decided how you wanted them to sound. You're just going with the moment. But it does require you to have the time to just be able to say the words out loud. Like, I like to do an activity while I'm doing this, like walking or doing the dishes, or do you know what I mean? So that your sole focus is not saying these words. So a good trick to use in whatever scenario, whether you have time to prepare or not, is imagine one very specific person you could address what you're saying to. A Toastmaster, let's say, introduction wouldn't necessarily be the same person that you choose for a speech, right? So you have to think of a specific person that this piece would apply to. So if I'm a Toastmaster and I have an introduction that I have to give and I want to make this more conversational and personal, I will pick a member in my group to say this to, a member that I like, that likes me, that I have a good relationship with, and say it to that person. If it's a speech and this speech would help my best friend, who, let's say it's a speech about relationships and she can't get bad out of a bad relationship, then I'm giving the speech to her. Always pick one person, the audience, that you would be saying these lines to.
It's like when you're introducing somebody, it's almost like you're introducing one person to another person.
Exactly. So if I'm introducing you, then I will say it to, who am I speaking with now, Greg?
Yes.
Oh, I can be that. Okay, so then I will say it to Ryan. So always think of just a person, very specifically a person that you're speaking to. And this is very easy to do because you can just, like, let's say you're introducing a big welcome to the Toastmasters International, you know, conference or whatever. You can just say it to your favorite Toastmaster, like you're inviting them. So, and then it just becomes a little bit more personal.
Looking online, I saw your demo reel where you did some skydiving and race car driving and trapeze acts. Are you actually doing those yourself, or those special effects?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I have this thing. I'm addicted to getting outside of my comfort zone. And I do it in all kinds of ways. I have this logic where I think, like, if I throw myself out of a plane, then, like, doing an audition will be easier. You know what I mean? Like, I have this strange logic. And it doesn't really work per se. But what it does is that it puts you in an intimate contact with your fears, so that you can at least recognize, like, oh, it's that voice again. And you know what? Last time it came up, I was able to get through that situation and I survived it. So I just repeat these experiments and constantly get myself out of my comfort zone. Now, these days, I stick to snowboarding, so it's not so crazy. But, you know, for a while, it was like, oh, throw yourself out of an airplane like 30 times. Drive a race car. I was on this mission. I mean, I still am. I calmed it down a little bit.
Fantastic. Lots of great advice there. Lots of ideas, Lily. We really appreciate you joining us on the show today. And before we let you go, where can our listeners go to learn more about you?
Thank you for having me on the show. First of all, it was such a pleasure to speak with you. They can go on my website, lilywexuvoiceovers.com. And I know my name is strange, but it's lilywexuvoiceovers.com.
I was going to say, Lily, I hope Ryan and I pass the audition, of course, in the words of John Lennon.
Oh, you guys are great. That was fantastic.
Lily Wexu, thanks for being with us today.
My pleasure.
Isn't it about time you published that book you've been thinking about? We can help with that. At ebookit.com, we've been providing authors and small presses with ebook publishing services since 2010. Visit us today at ebookit.com and let us know how we can help you.